Roberto, it's so good to see you again or talk
to
you again.
Totally. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
A long while since we've done this experience. Since we've talked about politics and
politics.
And people in Congress and in a fictional version of our own congressional Congress. I can't even keep that up anymore. But yeah,
right. No, I get it. It's good. We're finally back and we're going to be talking about the House of Cards.
On the House of Cards show.
You did an amazing connection between Paradise Lost
and our Frank Underwood.
Yeah, that completely was the big point of House of Cards chapter 30 or season or episode 4 if you go by episodes, but it's chapter 30.
Yeah, because I rewatched it before we recorded this again just to kind of get myself oriented again. I was like, oh wait, I forgot it opened up with the funeral and then kicked into gear with all the stuff and then ended with the spitting. I'm like, wow, that's so great. I'd totally forgotten because it's been such a long since we recorded. It's like, did we watch episode 30? I checked oh yeah, I did watch it. Cool. Let me skip ahead to 31.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, we don't really have to go too far into the rest of episode 30 or chapter 30.
Well, because chapter 30, I mean, as interesting an episode as it is when it comes to those points, really just sets the backdrop for the rest of the political push of the season, so to speak.
I agree. I mean, it just sets the stage for Gavin needing more information about where is Rachel, and then it Dunbar running for president, and then the guy that was arrested in the American, yep. The gay American who was arrested in Russia, Michael Corrigan. So really, it just sets the stage for that.
Yeah.
And so we can talk about chapter 31.
So yeah, let's move on actually to 31 because again, really I think that's where things kick in because Frank is like flipping switches that I don't think were intended. It's so funny because there's some things going on right now in chapter 31.
Right.
Of Frank basically really interpreting rules in a way that I only think Frank could interpret. Like it's funny. I think in my head about there's always a guy and I have to relate to something geeky just because that's who I am. You know, there's always that guy in plays a Magic the Gathering match that has read the rules a certain way and interpreted them a certain way and knows how to manipulate the stack in a certain way. And Frank, you know, comes in and you know, basically is like, you know what? I think this is I think having unemployment as high as it is a disaster situation.
Yes.
You know who handles disaster situations?
Whoa, FEMA. Federal Emergency Management Agency.
I
Homeland Security.
There are some balls on Frank Underwood that are the size of something because
yes.
You know?
Well, okay, so I will say I try hard to keep my personal real life kind of experience out of this, but I actually work on a project that was funded several or a couple of $1 million about Homeland Security or federal disaster preparedness. Right. It has to do with the records and information technology and preparation for that during a disaster or a hurricane. And it came straight out of Hurricane Katrina. There's money that's come out of it. And so basically the people, the world that I live in doesn't necessarily really get that federal funding. It's more history or archive or, you know, museum type related, but we knew enough to know to head up Homeland Security for their grants and their federal aid. And all of a sudden, you know, we got funded for things that we never thought we would ever get funded for that would, I mean, not that we shouldn't, but just that it would be neglected. But when you open up the FEMA cookie jar, there's a lot of money in funding.
Well, because usually that cookie jar, and it's so interesting this episode in that regard, because that cookie jar, that is not so much a cookie jar. That is a in case of emergency break open glass type situation.
Yes, it is. It's
quite literally. It is a if things are going down, if the button has been pressed and something's gone wrong, that is our like last resort. Like break that open and let's do this.
Good point. That's exactly the way it's supposed to be.
Right, and it's so.
But that's not reality.
You know, because if you do the logic, like, I guess, Frank, logically, you have a point. But I love – I think the director of FEMA in the episode – I forget the guy's – the actual character's name. But he's like, yes, I guess you could think of this as an emergency. But, I mean, this is for, like, real, you know, like people have lost not just, like, lives.
But it's funny because I don't know the guy's name in the show either, but I do know the guy's name in real life. His name is Craig Fugate, and he used to be the head of the emergency management agency in Florida when I was working there and doing disaster preparedness there. So, yeah, like he was hired because of all of those major hurricanes in 2004 and 2005. He's the dude that manages it all now with Homeland. He's the secretary of Homeland Security. And like it's kind of funny to see this situation with this guy who really like I want to do the right thing, and yet this president is just going to take my money and run.
It's such a trickier situation because you know Frank really really wants America Works to kick in. He really wants it, whether for you know ulterior motives or some type of dynasty or legacy or something like that. He desperately wants this to be a thing. And he will, you know, do anything possible to get that to go into action. It's one of those weird things that just like, man,
like he pisses off. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, part of me is like, if Frank hadn't committed so much to America Works, I don't know if he'd be this passionate about it.
You know that he's only using it just to give him that, as we mentioned before in our previous episodes, we associated this with the Work Progress Administration or the New Deal of FDR. Yeah. He's trying to create a program like so massive that there's no way he would not get elected next time around. And it's just kind of funny that he... You know that he thinks he can get away with this. I mean, there's no.
What I love about it so far is that Congress is chewing him out.
Yes.
But it's very apparent who he's. You know, like there is the what actually happens in Congress, and then there's the court of public relations, the court of the public, if you will, and. It's so funny. Like, there's a shot near the end of episode one as he's giving his like 4th of July speech and saying all the things he needs to say. That they just start panning down the line of people who are there in line in DC for the you know at the FEMA tent because you know they're like if Frank has balls, the governor of DC in this series has you know ginormous balls. I love the quote. I think there's a quote of like I forgot what Frank said was like, something like you know like. That he loves this governor because he's like, you know, like there's something, but not governor, like, you know, governors, this mayor, like mayors are like, you know, I don't know what he exactly says.
Oh yeah. That's why, or basically that's why we got this governor. Cause he's so, you know, or he's willing to stand up or he's
something like that, but
or take chances kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know the quite quote either, but I know.
Right. But the point is like, he's doing it for obviously his own office. So at that, but you see, you know, this giant line of people, you know, at the end of it, of course, being Freddy and whatnot. Well, you know, we've
Freddy! That.
But I like it that it's this moment of, you know, you don't just see people like, you know, looking at their phones, whatever, kind of doing whatever they're doing, kind of reading the things. They're all paying attention. They're all looking at attention, either in pride or smiling or whatever.
They're all watching the fireworks.
You know, watching the fireworks. But they are when Frank is speaking – you know, they're not looking for where the line's moving. They're looking at Frank. They're
listening. They're, to, yeah, Right.
You know, and that's a very powerful kind of shot, because here are, you know, in D.C., the most downtrodden of people right now, people who don't quite, yeah. Again, it mirrors sort of our economy, mirrors sort of our world, you know. So a lot of that is very much this. Here are your tired, your poor, if you will. And maybe not as bad as that, but they're all paying attention to Frank. And that's a pretty powerful thing to have in your back pocket when you're going to run for office potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. It was amazing. It was such an amazing shot. And again, we're talking really about the final scene of this episode. But that's okay, because you've watched it all if you're listening. Right. But that was really kind of amazing that you hear Frank on this like big loud speaker system or whatever, and he almost kind of echoes, and it's very weird. It's very kind of I don't know what the exact word to say. Like I don't want to compare it to, you know, like when Hitler gave his
speech. No, it's very presidential. It's very FDR.
But it's different than that. It's very propaganda, obviously. But I mean, the propaganda is really just shoved in this people's face.
For lack of better words, it's patriotic. Let's leave it at that, because
okay, but it, but I mean, but they're staring. Well, no, because there's huge fireworks.
What I'm trying to say is that you know, one could argue
it's crazy.
Yeah, of course it's crazy. But I mean, one could argue that. And again, this is history. This is not personal opinion.
Yeah, history. I'm sorry. Scratch what I said about.
No. I'm going to take what you said and go from there, because I have to state history for this reason. Because
triumph of the will type thing.
Because when Hitler did his speeches and whatnot, he was talking to history.
Frank wasn't even there. This was like remote.
Right. But what I'm trying to say is, like, if we're going to compare it to that.
Okay.
Portion of history.
Fuck. You know, I'm sorry. I should.
Well, no. Now. No. Don't worry. I'm gonna pull you out of this.
Hang on. Stop.
All right.
Oh God, I shouldn't have said that.
It's okay. It's easy. Don't. I'm gonna just trust me on this one. So I realized, like, we're talking Hitler. Like, what do you mean? Like, well, you know, if we look at historically, that when Germany exited World War I, they were completely and utterly destroyed. They had no economy. There's a whole bunch of stuff like that. And lo and behold, comes this guy by the name of Adolf, you know, talking about how we're going to get them jobs and stuff like that. In this case, it was spinning up the military, you know,
I wasn't even going that far.
No, I know. Yeah. But I mean, the point of that being is that when that was happening at that point in time, it wasn't about what it was now. It was basically a very patriotic thing. It was like, you know, proud to be German and shit like that. Cut that out. That SH word.
Okay, just repeat what you just said.
Yeah, it was all about being proud about being German and stuff like that.
Right.
Whereas this is that same thing. It's proud to being American. You know, it's got the fireworks and you know, talking about our forefathers and it's 4th of July. It's happening on the most patriotic of days.
Yeah.
And I think what that shot shows, what that is illustrating, is that while he is stepping on Congress, while he is trampling on everything that has truly been done by the forefathers, no one cares, because that doesn't matter, because what speaks louder than words? Jobs.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's brilliant. The job element is brilliant.
Yeah, no.
Totally. I think I said before I would vote for him, although I think it's utopia. I think that this is the plan he has set aside here is not going. I mean, it can't work, you know. But boy, does it sound nice and cushy.
Totally. You know? I'm I hope it works, because I'm curious. I'm curious if it will.
Before we move on, let me ask you one quick thing, and let's talk about our sponsor. But how do you feel about Freddy? We see Freddy at the end.
I have a feeling of what he's going to be, and part of me hopes it's not that. I haven't watched, you know, much like I said before. But I tend to watch.
You have not watched Further Beyond.
No.
So tell us what is it? What is it you're thinking?
I have a feeling that Freddy is going to be, because you know, we'll talk about it later with the author and whatnot, and trying to find a story.
Right.
I have a feeling that Freddie is going to be the subject of something, of some type of PR campaign or whatever, you know, a la some, you know, because that's happened many a times before in political history, and Freddie with his history with Frank, there's a potential for that. Because I'm like, why would you? Because again, like, why would you introduce this character like that in line if you're not going to just use him? Because it's like, look, we got this guy still here. Like, why would you do that sort of thing as a writing team? Just to be like, you know, a nod to the fans. Like, I guess that's fair, but that just seems like a very cheap nod. I'm just like, I have a feeling they're going to utilize him more in some type of real fashion, whether it be a PR campaign or something where we follow Freddy for a bit. Maybe we truly see how America Works really is actually what it does, and if it really is doing a job or not through the eyes of Freddy, if nothing more, because if that kind of thing. That's my guess.
That's amazing. Actually, I'm kind of like, there are a few other things I would like to cover. I would like to talk about how Frank is now trying to utilize this America Works and promote it. And there's a little thing about a video game, but why don't we talk about our sponsor?
Totally. Let's talk about our first sponsor, that of course being UK2.net. They cover all of the bandwidth and hosting costs here for all the shows at the British Tech Network. They can hook up with web addresses, help you build websites, give you all the tools you need to manage the way your website handles traffic. They handle, you know, not only just shared hosting stuff, but of course, you know, if you need something beefy like a VPS. If we had Charlotte here today with us, she'd be singing the praises, telling how they supported her site.
Come back, Charlotte!
Some British election and stuff like that. Maybe she posted something on the whole FIFA, you know, scandal, and everyone hit her site in the British saying, I knew it was right. FIFA's completely corrupt. And she'd be telling us how they handled all the traffic. But of course, you can head on over to BritishTechNetwork.com/sponsors for a list of offer codes to help you guys get a deal from those awesome people there. And of course, I'd like to thank UK2.net for hosting this show and everything else here at the British Tech Network.
Awesome. All right, so here's a thing that I put into kind of our side notes, and I thought it was kind of weird at first, and I didn't really know. Like, one of the things I like about the show is the technology and the fact that, like, when someone says a text message, we see it on the screen, and, you know, and they play video.
Or like the Samsung television thing, where you could just flick it to the TV.
That
was amazing. I was so amazed. They didn't even, like, it was so blatant, but, like, no one even pointed it out. It was so, I'm sorry. That was the best ad of, like, let me show you this in the bigger screen. Floop. Oh, sorry. I had to point that. But anyways, continue.
No. Go on. That's great.
But you're right. There's all these things. And one of the things that's mentioned to get this writer in the sort of whatever was Frank goes, to Remy and Seth.
Yeah.
Have you ever played the game Monument Valley? And it's like, I don't play video games. I sold my Xbox 360 on eBay.
Yeah, Seth was like, well, I had to sell my Xbox. Like, I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, because Seth isn't a gamer at all. But
right.
Monument Valley, and I'd forgot about this game because it was one of those things that I totally
– I remember when it came out, and I remember when the show came out originally that there was a big thing about how Frank was trying to be more up to date. And I love the fact that he's not playing Call of Duty. Like,
the thing is that this is what's interesting about that.
He's getting more like us. You know, he's becoming more like of this – like tech world of
Don't think Call of Duty doesn't make a crap ton of money either. It doesn't not crap people play it. But what was interesting was because you had said that it felt weird
and it felt weird that, like, at first that they pointed that out. But I understand that the reason was because the guy that wrote the review is now going to become the author of his presidential book. You know, the book of his life.
Well, it's interesting.
It was still a little bit weird, and I was wondering what you thought.
Well, because here's my thought this is the thing. Monument Valley, and for those that have not played it, is very much a puzzle kind of game. It's a very indie game. It's was on mobile, everything else. You can get it for iOS, Android, Windows, Windows Phone. So it's a mobile game. But it was one of the indie darling games that came out, and you know, it's beautiful. It's a very kind of cool thing. It has kind of an M.C. Escher approach to how the puzzles are done. Very cool game. the complete antithesis, if you will, of a Call of Duty. You know, Call of Duty games are these giant, like if this would be almost like, you know, if Monument Valley is what's that director that made Bottle Rockets?
You mean Tenenbaums or the
Admiral Tenenbaum? What's his name?
Fuck, and
I'll look it up. It'll be here. No, it's the freaking guy. I'm gonna say Royal Tenenbaums. I'll look it up right now. It is Wes Anderson. Sorry,
Wes Anderson. Fuck yeah.
It's course. Okay. So if Monument Valley is a Wes Anderson kind of thing. Call of Duty is a Michael Bay sort of thing. They're both you know, quality products in their own right, but they are polar opposites.
Yeah,
and the same thing goes for this in this kind of thing. So you know, if Frank is the kind of guy, you know, Frank makes a point of like, I tend to play first person shooters. I need the adrenaline and all that kind of stuff. But Monument Valley is a very much a peaceful game. It is not an adrenaline rushing kind of game. It's an indie game. It's a mission arc style, that kind of thing. And so what I saw it as is that it wasn't so much of like, oh, I mean, yes, it probably was a plug to Monument Valley. There's probably some deal that worked out. I just don't know about it.
Right.
But what I saw it as was more of a, this is not so much trying to show what Monument Valley is as a game. This is showing how this guy as a writer convinced the most bro of bro gamers, the most guy that plays these hardcore first person shooters,
really,
to play a game he would never have ever thought about playing.
Do you think so?
Yeah, of course, because there's a point where he starts quoting him and he starts putting the whole thing of like,
right, MC Escher, like, well, I need you to sell my
because if this guy can sell a game like Monument Valley to a person that all he knows of video games is shoot, kill, you know, rush, Mountain Dew, that kind of thing. He can sell a game like this to that person. This is the guy that can sell anything to anyone, not because he's selling it, but because he's giving an honest opinion.
Interesting. And I think it's very important. The way I looked at it was that I kind of thought that maybe Frank wasn't that kind of Mountain Dew guy that, you know, just found the, Call of Duty game and played it. I kind of thought that maybe Frank's mind was a little bit more open, like yours and I.
I never took that either, because only because Frank had so, like, he had the headset on. He had this. He made a very effort point to always have his Xbox around to play the game. I wonder what the Frank Underwood would think, you know, the Frank Underwood of that world would think of playing, you know, Modern Warfare, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, where he as an actor is actually in the game. I'm kidding with that point. Yeah. There's a recent game where Kevin Spacey is like the lead guy, the lead enemy villain in one of the Call of Duty games. That's why. So, I mean, like, they're big titles. And I always felt like when I heard him say about this thing is that if this kind of writer can put in words that will convince this kind of gamer, this kind of person to check out something that they normally wouldn't check out, that's what Frank took it as. He took it like, this guy sold me on this game. I would have, this is a game that would never have been on Frank's radar. Would never have, you know, and again, I put a lot of thought of this because you think of how Frank is, you know, only because I know video games and stuff like that very well, that this is not something that would have passed his plane of view. But because this writer pitched it the way he did, not because he was trying to pitch or sell anything, but because he was telling, like, this is a great experience. How are you guys missing this? And he gave this beautiful review telling about this game. If it was, and that's why Frank said, if after reading this, you don't want to, you know, like, you know, he said it himself, you know, read this and tell me you don't want to play Monument Valley. And it was very much a strong point of saying, this is the guy who is going to tell my story. Because he, you know, once I give him sort of the you know, put him here to learn, you know, see how people are kind of swarming to this. Because if you look outside, you see the FEMA tent. It's a long ass line, and this is just DC, and it's been that way for all, you know, as the mayor had said, it's been there since hour one, that kind of line. And so that was my take on it, was more of it showing how he as a writer can pitch this stuff.
Interesting. No, I think you got a great point going. I had it in our notes that we definitely needed to address this whole Monument Valley game and how that would work into this.
Didn't think it'd be that big. You didn't think I'd have that much to
say. No. It was perfect. It was perfect. No, I think that's the angle that our show goes for.
If I'm anything, I'm a champion to the indie games, and it was really it was really cool to come see.
Yeah, and I love that he's doing the indie games.
I am too. But like I said, I'm really curious as to how that got mentioned, whether a deal was made or whether the writer really liked it. I'm curious because again, it was a top indie game and it was a top mobile game, but it's not like a free to play mobile game. It's not like a Candy Crush. It's not something that would have the money juice to have like bought a sponsorship thing. So I'm really curious how that got into the thread, because it's a very specific, you know, it is an indie game, and it's not like this guy has like, has the budget of a Candy Crush or a Samsung or somebody else to pay Netflix. So I'm very, and especially Netflix, you know, keep that in mind, not like Amazon or anything like that. So I'm very curious how I might look it up after the episode, after the recording, figure out what the deal is, because I'm super curious as to how that got mentioned. Because it's just I had kind of forgotten about it. I was like, oh, right. I was like, Monument Valley. Is that like, no, it's a real game. That's indie game. They're like, yeah. And so for me, it was cool to hear that. But I took it as here's this writer. He just pitched this, you know, a game where you play a silent princess, as Frank put it. To Frank Underwood, the guy who needs adrenaline, who needs a high at every moment.
Yeah.
And this writer convinced him to check out this game and enjoy it and get something out of it. And if that's, you know, that's the kind of writer he is, because, you know, you make anything sound interesting, then that's the kind of writer you want sort of, you know, potentially telling your story, whatever it happens to be, because you know that even if you fail, even if things go wrong, it is still going to be an interesting story, and it'll still be your kind of marker in history in some sort of fashion.
Awesome.
We've skipped over the whole Michael Corrigan arrested in Russia kind of thing.
Well, okay. Well, no, I mean, honestly, I think that there's a little bit to be said about Claire and her reaction with that, but there's also other things to talk about Stamper, meeting with Dunbar and Gavin, like needing more information on Rachel and Jackie. But yeah, like go ahead and do that extra ad, and then like let's very quickly
let's sum all of that up. Let's thank one more sponsor. That of course is the Network Union. They're an authorized BT business partner to sell their The Network Union is an authorized BT business partner licensed to sell their global and UK services. Their experience has been earned from working with the large global and UK enterprise, but now they're also working with SMEs. They handle sort of the beefier, bigger connection, things like MPLS, VPLS, Ethernet to Internet lease lines, that sort of thing. So if you're kind of, you know, in the IT and maybe you're looking for something to handle a lot more connection than something like a simple DSL or cable line can actually provide, head on over to networkunion.co/British Tech for more information and to show your appreciation for their support of the British Tech Network.
Amazing. Thank you. And okay, so going back into the show, one thing that I do want to mention, okay, the second abuse of presidential power that the president has done, you can't really argue and say it's abuse, but he used an executive order to allocate UN troops to handle this UN Middle East peace deal that Claire wants to have done. So basically, when you do an executive order, you're really bypassing Congress.
Yep.
And that is kind of a horrible but almost okay loophole that the president always has. In the United States, you can always kind of just bypass Congress and just do an executive order. And that is what this episode is about, is that first he is abusing the Stafford Act by appropriating funds from the Federal Emergency Management Agency into America Works. And then the second thing is that he's doing this executive order to get troops into the Middle East, only to appease Claire and this whole thing with this like kind of like Cold War fight with the Russians. And like, I think that that's absolutely insane. But the funny thing about, okay, if I can say one thing about this whole Claire Ewan story, I love the fact that she called in the Russian ambassador to a meeting in the ladies' room at the UN. And as he's walking in, her aide says, she's just putting on makeup. It's okay. You can go in. She ends up taking a pee.
Right.
On the toilet.
Got your thing.
While he has to talk to her. She's and it's such a frank move. And so what I wanted to ask you was, Claire is pretty vicious.
She
is very much that kind of person to kind of put that together to make a like a brain
right
thing on somebody to pressure them into a situation. Do you think of the relationship between Frank and Claire? Do you think that Frank is influencing Claire, or is Claire influencing Frank, or is it a like a joined sort of like corrupt sort of relationship that allows them to take this kind of power where I'm going to pee on your grave, or I'm going to sit on the toilet while you talk to me, because that's how much respect I have of you.
Well, because I always think that the whole toilet thing is almost the equivalent of men talking in a urinal, to be honest.
Okay.
And I took that as that kind of thing.
Yeah, good point.
Where it's like, we're just a couple of she's not a guy, but just like, you could talk here.
Because she's had the whole thing of people saying, talk to your husband. And she said, yeah, I will talk to the president, you mean. Yeah.
And so, but to answer your question, I think Claire puts it best, actually, because there's a point where Frank goes, honey, I'm proud of you. You did it. No, we did it. I think they're both just this kind of toxic couple that feeds off each other. At times, like I said, the hardest part is going to be if one gets too big or whatnot. But I think that's just it. They feed off each other. They do it. They figure it out. Because while Frank's got some, you know, juice, you know, Claire's got her own juice now. And now that she's actually in the UN and kind of in a point where she can start flexing those muscles a lot more, that it's almost like she's calmed down a bit. Like, she's no longer kind of worried or crying or anything like that, at least in this episode. She's just now back to kind of normal of like, okay, cool, I can do this. And it's good to see, because I, you know, not because I want to see her crying about that, but it's good to see her kind of in a more normal state, if that makes any sense.
But like, I'm kind of wondering about Claire, and I think that she has more – I don't know. I don't know who's more ruthless at this point.
I think they're both equally as ruthless. It's just they're in different spheres.
Okay.
Like, international politics is way different than local or specifically, you know, national.
They're
all different. And so international politics is a different kind of balancing act, whereas, you know, national politics is a different kind of balancing act. And they're both just doing what they got to do in each one. Frank's just kind of, you know, if Congress won't play ball, then Frank will go around the back and pull some things that no one thought he could do, because he's like, all right, fine. You guys are going to play ball. I'm going to do this anyways. Boom, boom, boom. And of course, because Frank is, you know, if, you know, Frank is both pitching the mentality of like, I'm probably not going to run. You know, he's pitching the mentality of the American people saying, I'm not going to run again. Like, he's going to run again. Of course, we know that.
Of course.
But he's pitching the idea of like, I am not going to run again. I'm going to get things done. And so that's what you got to do sometimes, because Congress is going to be slow and the Senate's going to – they're all going to be slow, because they all want to keep their jobs. They all want to keep – you know, the status quo, because that's what keeps them elected. They all have this same mission, like, well, we'll just kind of keep the balance of power here because we got to do that. And you know, Frank is like trying to get something done because, again, for either it be for the American people, most likely for his selfish reasons, to be happy with the American people and to kind of show a little bit of legacy or whatever. But if Congress isn't budging with him and helping him out because he's Frank Underwood and they all screwed him, it's like, all right, fine. There are ways I can get around this. Like, I go, well, you know, it's like, I love what he says to the UN, like, we're gonna fight this in the Congress. Cool. You get the law passed. I'll veto it. And then you guys can get the 3/4 in the Senate if you can pull that off, you know, but till then, you know, get away from me. Because that's how Frank operates. If you are not on Frank's team, you know, if you're not with him, you're against him. And I think that with Claire too, is that if you're not with Claire, you're against Claire, and she will, you know, like she goes like, I didn't make the top, you know, what was it? The whole, like, you know, like, if you do this, we're going to put sanctions right on your, you know, on you. And it's just like, it's very much, again, it's what you can do in international politics, what you can do in national politics are quite different worlds. But I think why I'm liking Claire in this mode is because you can actually see her balance that really well.
Mm.
That's at least my opinion. We should probably move on because we're almost out of time here.
Yeah, we are.
To the upset, the interesting thing, that being Stamper and Dunbar potentially teaming up.
Yeah, he hands over basically the journal. Like, he reaches out to her, says he wants to help her. She doesn't believe him. She doesn't trust him. Obviously, she shouldn't. You know, he says, I don't work for, Frank anymore.
Right.
And, but yet, he gives her the journal from the doctor that he was
supposed to destroy. Which is, this is what's cool, I like about Stamper now.
Okay.
Is, at that first meeting, one could have thought maybe he's doing this for Frank. Maybe he's doing this as a spy or something like that. But then he busts out the journal.
Right.
And I'm like, oh no, he ain't doing Frank. This is all for Stamper, and he's getting it back at the man that scorned him.
Yep.
What do you think? What do you think of all that? Like, what's your take now on Stamp? You know, solo Stamper versus no longer Frank Underwood Stamper.
Without looking into the future, because I have already finished the season.
Of course.
At this point, I was kind of shocked. I was actually completely shocked. I was shocked that Stamper did this. I mean, in a way, I completely understand, because he's been through a lot of physical pain. You know, in the condition he's in, in his environment, and you know, not knowing that he'll ever come back, having to rely on Seth coming to him with updates.
Yeah.
It scared me. And I am scared. I'm scared. I'm scared at this point. And I don't want to let on that how much I'm scared.
The beauty part is, the funny part is, I am no longer scared for Stamper.
No, I'm not scared for Stamper. I'm just scared of, well, I am.
See, I'm not. I'm at, like,
I'm scared of
a shock for me. It was more
I'm
of a
both scared for and of Stamper.
Okay, for me, it wasn't so much of a shock. It was more of a, oh, that's the game we're playing. Okay, cool.
Okay.
Because for me, him having the journal means one thing. It means he needed insurance against Frank, and he was smart enough to know that he needed insurance against Frank in the Underwoods. Which means he already has the mentality of, I don't trust anyone as far as I can throw them.
Because
if he had trusted Frank, he would have burned the journal. It would have been gone, and we would never have seen it again.
Right.
But because he has it still in his possession, means he didn't even trust Frank while he was working with Frank.
Right.
He's always been from day one out for himself. This just happened to keep him off all the things he needed to. And now that that's no longer a possibility, it's like, well, my services, you know, I have a certain set of skills. I have a certain things I do.
Exactly.
You know, I know things, and I can do things that you can't do because you can't get your hands dirty.
Why would he have not destroyed it otherwise? Yes, absolutely.
And it revealed to me that was that, okay, this is the kind of game we're playing. This is how this election is going to go down. All right, I understand the combat now. And that was, for me, a very important scene, because I now know Stamper is solo, is no longer attached to Frank in any way, shape, or form, because that is like – this is the ultimate, you know, burning of the bridge without him actually burning any bridges.
Good. That's an interesting point that you bring up that I'm so excited for us to get back to in the next episodes. And also I would approach very quickly, Jackie Sharp, the majority whip. Now she was approached by Remy to run for office, or Frank and Remy asked her to run for office against, just to be that person to counteract Dunbar.
Right.
And Remy encouraged her to get married. And you can see that there's a whole thing there with Jackie that I really honestly think that Jackie and Remy have some kind of love.
There's something there. There'll always be something there, but
she's going to run for office, and it's obvious that she's going to put him behind, because she's going to marry this man, Alan, who's a nice guy. I don't know. Do you any thoughts on any of that?
Same as, you know, I think, I don't know when Jackie put what it says in the episode, but it might have been in 30, might have been 31. But she says, "Yeah, marrying Alan's great. I get two kids without the stretch marks, and you know that, you know, yeah." Very much this. I mean, she loves the death. Not like she doesn't care, but she's very much this happens to work out for both of us, and it is a decent marriage of, you know, it is both a marriage of convenience and a marriage of just, it works out because he's a nice guy and they do care for each other in some form. And even he knows, like, yeah, this is probably what would be best. And it's not like he doesn't get a little bit of clout too and that kind of thing. So it all works out.
We still see a little thing between her and Remy.
If Remy was the intense kind of thing, Alan's a sensible kind of thing. You know, when you start thinking about, you know, public image and how people perceive you, that's where you go to. And that's the world of politics.
Fuck that kind of really.
Whoa.
I'm all for the I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. So I think that pretty much wraps up this episode.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Before we go, of course, if you would like to let us know your thoughts on this episode or any future episodes and questions you have for us or questions, points you want to discuss, you can hit us up at BritishTechNews@gmail.com. Just make sure to mention House of Cards show in the subject line. It'll get forwarded to either Jackie or I or some type of account. So we'll definitely get those emails. We just want to hear what you guys are in the audience are thinking, because we may go on a point and tangent here, but maybe like, you know what? I wish they go back here and discuss this. And we're also kind of working on future getting some guests and people like that. So if there's any guests you'd love us to try our damnedest to get on the show to talk about House of Cards and their sort of thoughts and dreams and such like that, let us know there at the email. Again, it's British Tech Network. Oh, sorry, British Tech News. I keep saying the wrong one. BritishTechNews@gmail.com. And again, just put in the subject line House of Cards show or for House of Cards show or something along those lines, and it'll get to us for sure.
By the way, if you like this show or the other shows, make sure you support their Patreon, British Tech News / Patreon.
Yeah, patreon.com/British Tech. Is it British Tech News?
It's British Tech News. Yeah, I think. Okay, hang on. Let me just check that really quick, and then I can edit all of this later. Yeah. We're not live, so it doesn't matter. Patreon. Sorry. I should have had that handy.
It's all right.
Known it forever, and it didn't matter, so.
It's fair. It's okay. It's all good.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. I'm sorry. No. I put too many dots between the... Oh shit! Fuck it.
That's okay. All right, let's take it from the top.
Yeah. All right.
Just
go. Where would we go from there? Scratch the Patreon. We don't even need to add it. We can add it later. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Roberto. And I'm looking forward to hearing what other people think about the show. We're going to get some guests in pretty soon. And we're going to do some live recordings, too. So I really want to get people in our chat and get a little bit of response about the show as well in the future.
Totally, totally. Of course, Jackie, where can people find you online these days?
JackieHearn.com, at JackieHearn81. Where can people find you?
I'm at Vincent404 on the Twitters. If you want to check out anything else I do, head on over to CosmicRadio.tv.
Awesome. Okay, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye.